Champion Cyclocross 2018. We will know it in a bit more than 70 minutes from now. Ready for the official call-up for the 2018 UCI World Championship Cyclocross in the Men's Elite category. First rider invited to the start, representing the Netherlands. De eerste renner uitgenodigd naar de start met rug nummer 10 voor Nederland, Mathieu van der Poel. Followed by the defending champion representing Belgium, voor België met start nummer 1, de titelverdediger Wout van Aert.
I've got a mantra that you create a show first and a race second.
You're listening to the Cyclocross Podcast by The Cycling Podcast in association with Rafa. Rafa exists to improve your ride with the finest kit, inspiring stories and vibrant clubhouses across the globe.
Hello, my name is Lionel Burney, and this is the Cyclocross Podcast by the Cycling Podcast and in association with our friends at Mud Eater. I'm in Valkenburg, a very chilly Valkenburg. It's Sunday evening, and around about an hour ago, the Men's Elite race finished. You heard there at the start the atmosphere of the World Cyclocross Championships, and also a word from Brooke Watts, the founder of Cross Vegas. That was the American voice you heard in that little opening montage, and we'll hear a bit more from Brooke later on in the episode. He'll feature in part two. Before that, I'll recap the men's race with our friend Renard Schotter of Sportza, the Belgian TV station. But in summary, it's been muddier than yesterday, if that's possible, colder than yesterday, certainly, and there's been a bigger crowd in here today, and that has meant that the atmosphere really has prolonged all afternoon. And as I speak, a young Dutchman has just pulled his trousers down and mooned a TV camera. It's been that sort of afternoon here. There's the kind of the feel of the last day of a pop or rock festival up here, albeit an awful lot colder. But the story of the day was the race and the much anticipated battle between Wout van Aert of Belgium and Mathieu van der Poel of the Netherlands. And really, well, van der Poel, he didn't just come off second best, he came off third best, because van Aert really showed his dominance in the mud, and van Aert's Belgian compatriot Michael van Turenhout also overtook van der Poel to take the silver medal. It was a commanding performance by van Aert, although it had looked so good for van der Poel in the first 5 minutes of the race. He was at the front before van Aert pulled level with him and then pulled away and kept pulling away over the rest of the laps. There were a few moments that van Aert looked, well, not really fallible, but certainly a couple of missteps. He slipped in the pit lane and lost his glasses at one point. He had a slip a bit later on when he clipped the barriers and went down. But really, he had so much time in hand that the gold medal and the third rainbow jersey in a row were never really in doubt. Van der Poel was disappointing, really. He just didn't have the legs, either with the riding or the running. The gap kept opening up. He made a few small mistakes in the second and third laps, and that really allowed the door to open, and the gap stretched from 1 minute 49 to over 2 minutes and then 2.5 over the finish line. Well, Van Aert's advantage over Van der Poel was 2.5 minutes. At one point, Van der Poel even lost his third place in the race to Toon Aerts, but he managed to claw that back and actually finished quite impressively. Anyway, I'm going to catch up with our friend and correspondent from Sportza Television, Renard Schotter, and we'll recap the men's race. Well, I'm now joined by Renard Schotter, our correspondent from Sportza, Belgian television. Thanks for joining us this weekend, Renard. It's all over, although the party feels like it's just getting started up here. It feels to me like the last day of a music festival. The ground is all muddy and covered in plastic beer cups. The debris and detritus of the weekend is starting to be cleared up, but there's a lot of fans who still want to get themselves a drink. And it's a Belgian party here this evening.
Yeah, you can say that. And you can also see the the war zone we're actually standing in. And I think the war also today in on the course was really impressive, though I think everybody will be surprised by the distances we saw today. I mean, Wout van Aert really outclassed the rest of the field, which was a staggering performance, and I don't think anybody expected that scenario before the race.
Three wins in a row for Van Aert, the first rider to win three in a row since Roland Liboton in the early 1980s. Lots of riders have won multiple years, but it's not something we've seen in the last 3 years. What was it, though, about Mathieu van der Poel? He just never really seemed to get going. It looked all so good in the first 5 minutes, and then the tables were turned on him very quickly. He made a couple of little mistakes, and did that rock his confidence? What did he say after the race?
He said that he already in the second lap he felt that it would be rubbish, and that he didn't have the legs to respond to the power of Van Aert, especially on the running sections. There was this one steep section where you could see that he was struggling to get on top of that, whereas Van Aert was comfortably running up that hill, and I think the toughness of the course really made today's difference, because Van Aert is that rider that needs tough courses, and I think he was served by the gods, because if this would have been the World Cup circuit with the different conditions in October, then it would have been Mathieu van der Poel's race style, of course. And I think Wout has been served by circumstances, but there's also another factor playing a part, in my opinion. I heard afterwards Wout van Aert saying that he deliberately skipped in his mind results in the past two World Cups, whereas Mathieu had to perform because he was leading that World Cup, and so the peak was really there today. Van Aert really had that peak.
And the Belgians really had Van der Poel surrounded as well, didn't they? Michael van Toerenhout pulled away from him as well, which was a real surprise, I think. And then for a little while, even Tonet was in front of Van der Poel.
Yeah.
But I think Tonet probably paid the price for that effort. And then Van der Poel got in front of him. And I think the last lap of Van der Poel was probably one of the most impressive of the race, because he was closing the gap. He possibly, if it had been another 400-500 metres longer, he might have had the silver medal back in his sights. So he did rally well. He didn't give up at any point, Van der Poel, but overall a disappointing day.
That showed his class. I mean, all credits to Mathieu van der Poel, who delivered a very intense battle. Mentally, he could have dropped down after falling down to fourth, but he didn't, and he was riding in that final lap with silver again in the mirror. So I must say, huge respect for Mathieu's performances, and I don't think it was the stress that actually made him lose today. I think it were his legs, simple as that, and that he admitted frankly and honestly after the race. So he didn't have the legs to match Wout van Aert's extraordinary performance of today. I think that's basically the conclusion.
Probably the course played its hardest today, because the temperature really has dropped overnight. There's been a bit of snow, and the ground became even heavier, and the running sections looked, they were really, really difficult. I mean, in the first lap I noticed Van Aert and Van der Poel were taking the steps two at a time, and then gradually they were taking fewer steps two at a time, and it was just by the end they were just trying to get up those sections. But in terms of these two riders, they're so similar in age. I think Van Aert is maybe 4 months older than Van der Poel. They're both 23 years old. They are a head and shoulders really above the rest of the field, but it's quite a small field in cyclocross, isn't it? I mean, what do you think the future, the next maybe 2 years, will have in store for both of these riders? Will they carry on specialising in this, or is there broader horizons for them?
Well, actually, Niels Albert van Aert's team leader told me in Scoop after the race that Van Aert is probably going to do Omloop Nieuwsblad, which wasn't foreseen at first or 100% sure, but it looks like he's going to start his road season at Omloop Nieuwsblad. And Van Aert added to that, I will try at Nieuwsblad and make it a test with Flanders and Roubaix in the back of my mind. And so the big question now is, what will he do in the road experiment in his first classics, full classics season, which is the goal, eh? There's the white cards for Tour of Flanders, Paris-Roubaix. I don't know, really. I'm very curious to see what's going to happen there. But I was actually seduced by Stephen Hyatt, who afterwards, the American champion, who told me afterwards that Wout van Aert is the new Tom Boonen. So who knows what will happen in the future if a guy that went on a training camp and lived so closely with Wout van Aert says something like that. I'm sure he doesn't say it only for Wout's beautiful eyes, but because he believes in the strength of that Belgian guy.
Recent world champions like Lars Boom, Stibar, the Czech rider, of course, have made very successful transitions to the road. Are there any similar characteristics between these two riders and Boom and Stibar?
I think the big difference is that Wout is going to try it at a much younger age. I mean, Stibar stayed for longer in cyclocross before he tried seriously on road with success. So I'm very curious to see what's going to happen with that early age experiment, I'd call, of Wout van Aert. So it's very enticing and very promising. But Wout van Aert immediately backed down expectations. He said, whoa, wait. It's going to be my first classic season, so we just have to wait and see. And I think the wait, let's hope the wait is worth, how do you say that? I know they say Guinness is worth the wait. Let's hope the classics are worth the wait.
Well, I was just thinking maybe in Omloop Het Nieuwsblad and the other classics. I mean, the course, the roads zigzag across, don't they? We might see Van Aert taking some shortcuts across the fields, you know, to cut out maybe one or two of the climbs. I know that's not allowed, but the wetter, the muckier, well, the conditions of the classics would not be anything compared to what he's faced today.
But that's true, but also I think Van Aert will be praying for a wet Paris-Roubaix, because then the cyclocross riders will have an advantage. And it's been a while since we had a really wet Paris-Roubaix, so okay, I'm on motorbike that day. I'm not praying for rain, but if it's for the sake of a heroic race, let it rain.
Well, Renard, we've got to let you go because you need to get to Brussels Airport. You're flying out to the Dubai Tour. Quite a change, that, from very cold temperatures here. It'll be a little bit warmer in Dubai, I think, and the racing will be slightly different. And I imagine you'll probably see Daniel Freeb out there. So say hello to Daniel when you get out to Dubai. But in the meantime, you get on the road to Brussels, and thank you very much for joining us on the Cyclocross Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Lionel. It was a pleasure.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you to Science in Sport for sponsoring the Cycling Podcast and helping us to produce these first episodes of the Cyclocross Podcast. If you would like to get 25% off all Science in Sport products, that's energy bars and gels and powders to mix up into energy drinks and recovery drinks and all of the other things that they do, go to scienceinsport.com, and when you filled your basket, check out and enter the code SISCP25. That's SIS for Science in Sport, CP for Cycling Podcast, 25. Right, let's hear now from Brooke Watts, who really kind of pioneering in the world of cyclocross on the other side of the Atlantic. He founded Cross Vegas in 2007, that's now the Reno Cross, and that race became the first World Cup event to be held outside of the European heartland. Cross racing in America, well, I was keen to find out how it differs to the mud here, so I caught up with Brooke outside the VIP tent a little bit earlier on today. So I'm with Brooke Watts, the founder of Cross Vegas, the first... Blimey. Might have to restart.
Hooligans.
Cyclocross hooligans there.
Hooligans.
Interrupted us there by basically just taking out some frustration on the bins. You see all sorts at the cyclocross. I'm an English football supporter, so you know.
So this you're accustomed to this.
back in the day, way back in the day, yeah. When it used to be pretty hairy. But no, the cyclocross crowd, I think, on the whole, very friendly. But it's getting on in the afternoon now, and the beer's been flowing since this morning. Sorry, I'm with Brooke Watts, the founder of Cross Vegas, the first World Cup cyclocross event to be held outside of Europe and away from the heartland. The conditions at your events in the US, particularly when they're held kind of in the early part of the autumn, which is still kind of summery by our standards, the conditions here are very, very different. Ankle deep mud today, really thickening up on the course, but from
snowflakes flying,
but from an outsider's point of view, if I can call you that, what are the ingredients that make up the perfect cyclocross?
Well, I've got a mantra that you create a show first and a race second, And if you create the show, and how do you create the show? You have a course that's interesting for the spectators. You have food and beverages for them. And then the racing follows that. I also like to create courses in which you can stand in one place and see a significant portion of the course, the entire course. So stand in one place and watch 75% of the racing action. And then when you can't see the other 25%, hopefully you've got a big screen nearby and you can watch the rest of it. So those are a couple of my elements, ingredients, if you will, for a successful cyclocross race.
Of course, here in Europe, the sport grew up as a winter sport, but I'm imagining it's pretty warm on a weekday evening in when it was in Vegas, now Reno. Yeah. So it's a completely different vibe, completely different atmosphere, I guess, but you've taken those ingredients of the race and the show. I mean, we can hear the music in the background, we can see all the food and drink stands doing a roaring trade. It's probably the only thing in cycling, outdoors at least, where you can have a captive audience who can come into the venue and generate a bit of spectator-driven revenue on the day of the event, I suppose.
No, it's true. And as most people know, the business model for cyclocross in the United States is different from the European model. The European model being spectators pay to get in the gate. And then, of course, like anywhere, you're paying for food and beverage and all that. So I saw that that created a disadvantage for most American race organizers. They had no revenue stream to accomplish the things that they wanted to accomplish, paying for the necessary infrastructure, creating the flyovers, as we call them, the bridges, either the racers go over or the spectators go under, whatever the case may be. So I created for the first time in the United States, I used that European model. So I charged an admission to get into Cross Vegas, which the first year that I did that, there was a great outcry, but I took it as a responsibility. Look, if you're going to charge someone $10, $15 US, then you better put on a show. And it better be better than the average race. It better have lots of big screens. It better have some course features that are really exciting. So that's, I took that charge, that responsibility, and created multiple flyovers. I created, if some of the listeners have seen the images, I created the velodrome-esque banked turn that we put in 1 year. We put in a sand pit 1 year, typical sand pit, kind of flat. It was ho-hum. And then the next year I said, well, why does a sand pit have to be in the flats? Let's put the sand pit going up the hill. And then we called it a sand dune. So I created those show elements because I felt like, look, we were in Vegas. It better be darn exciting given what you're competing with. And people are paying to get in the door. They want to get their money's worth. Secondly, I spent many years coming here to Belgium and talking to teams and saying, you ought to come see this race. Why don't you come to the race? I never paid start money. I'm against doing that because that's a slippery slope. So what I did was sell the advantage of coming to America on behalf of your sponsors, coming to the Interbike Trade Show, coming and seeing American cyclocross, starting out your season in America, and then going back home and doing your racing. And it apparently worked because, in fact, the first Belgians to come over were Bart Wellens and Rob Peters, who were both riding for Telnet at the time, for Fedea at the time. And we created a Sporza television program around their trip. It was a 30-minute special that aired on Sporza before the first World Cup broadcast. This goes back to 2012, I believe. So that helped create even more interest. Once all the other European riders said, oh my gosh, how was it over there? Was it fun? The racing was good. It was warm. You got in between, you got to do some road miles and continue building your fitness. So it was great, very successful in that regard.
So lastly then, the cyclocross season has evolved. Now there's a couple of events in America before it all comes over back to the heartland here. I mean, what do you think is the next step? What kind of innovations or what steps do you think cyclocross can make to continue growing in terms of popularity away from this kind of heartland?
Well, one of the other things that I'm deeply involved in is the Pan American Confederation, which on our side of the world is the equivalent of the European Cycling Confederation. And so I created for the Americas the Pan American Cyclocross Championship, which we had never had before. We've gone in 4 years now. And this year it is moving to Canada. So we're moving to another cyclocross mad country, Canada, which is like the US, cyclocross is very popular. What do I see for the future? One of these days I see that we'll have the Pan American Cyclocross Championship in Argentina or Chile or Mexico. So to answer your question, I see further globalization. I've talked to some of the UCI heads to hear about what would it take for a continental championship in Oceania, which includes Australia and New Zealand. I talked to another gentleman about what would it take to have an Asian cyclocross championship, which encompasses Japan and the other parts of Asia. Because what you may not know is there's cyclocross everywhere. There's cyclocross in Singapore. There's cyclocross in Tehran, in Iran. They're racing cyclocross. Is it what we envision here? No, kind of like in Las Vegas, they're racing in dry conditions, you know, warm conditions. But I see this globalization continuing.
If you can get Canada on board and maybe have some ice and snow races, maybe that would be one of the things that would open the door to the Winter Olympics. We were talking about that on the podcast yesterday.
Oh, I am just waiting for the day that someone at the International Olympic Committee opens their eyes to the possibility that cyclocross can bring more viewers, more excitement to the Winter Games. Of course, the Winter Games are exciting as it is, but cyclocross in the Winter Olympics, it's a no-brainer.
Whoever you are, whatever you ride, whatever the reason, Rafa exists to improve your ride with the finest kit, inspiring stories, and vibrant clubhouses and communities all over the world.
Thank you to Rafa for sponsoring the cycling podcast and by extension the cyclocross podcast these past few days. This is the end of our little cyclocross experiment, but if it's gone well, and you'll be the judge of that, listeners, if it's gone well, we will try to put something together more regularly next cyclocross season and perhaps get to some World Cups and do some more interviews with riders and that kind of thing. So if you liked it, let us know. If you didn't like it, also let us know, but try to be constructive. I've come back down from the course where it was absolutely bitterly cold. I pretty much just about managed to get down here before, well, I was going to say the sunset, but there was no sun today. There was just light. It was light, a grey light hung over Valkenburg. My fingers are feeling a little bit pins and needly as they come back to life. Found a quiet corner of one of the bars down here at the Amstel Gold Race Experience again, and I'm joined by Balint Hamvas. Hello, Balint. How was your day today? I saw you dashing around, cameras on both shoulders, wrapped up a bit warmer than I was. I was amateur mistake. Today, I knew it was going to be cold and didn't make quite the right kit selection today. But how was your day?
It was a hard day. It's quite interesting from our perspective because on the one hand you want easy access everywhere, but you also want crowds that make the whole thing just into this magical thing that the World Championships is. But a lot of people means it's difficult to get around. It's difficult to get access to the good spots. So it's a kind of a mixed bag, but this is what we wanted. And that whole kind of cauldron of people was quite visually quite kind of arresting and quite phenomenal. So I would say it was a hard day, but it was a really, really good day.
You mentioned the crowd. I mean, the UCI have put out some information within about an hour of the finish just on some crowd numbers. Saturday's attendance were 12,656 and today's attendance 25,736. It did feel like a lot of people in there today, particularly in the bottlenecks of the course and where people were trying to get to the food and drink places. But the atmosphere in there was fantastic today. I have to say, a lot of that is down to not just the music. I mean, not my kind of music, really. The sort of the pounding Euro pop. Some of it is incredibly cheesy. We played a bit of that at the start of the show. And of course, you know, it's a bit like the Ghent Six. There is no getting away from the fact that one of the things that creates the atmosphere and one of the things that gets all the fans in the mood for the racing is the fact that there is an awful lot of beer drunk, isn't there?
Yeah, you can see all sorts of people. I saw a guy who was really insisting on me taking his photo. He was half naked. So from waist up, he was naked. He was wearing nothing, just letters of Ellie, as in Ellie is a bit, and on the back is Puk Moonen, who's Ellie's girlfriend. So he was probably an avid Ellie is a bit supporter, but he was like naked from waist up. And I was like, this guy is just going to get such a horrible cold tomorrow. So you get all sorts of people, and especially as the day goes on, people get more and more drunk. I would say 90% of them are kind of good drunk, like they kind of just enjoying themselves. Sometimes you feel you run into kind of rowdier people. So and that happens all the time.
Balin, what did you make of the race today? Renard and I talked about it earlier. It didn't turn into the duel that we were expecting, anticipating. It was a one-man show in the end.
Yeah, I think we all kind of expected, in a way, a similar race. It's just with different actors. I think everybody expected Mathieu van der Poel to just ride away, to have this crazy performance and just leave everyone behind. And then essentially what happened was coming out of Mathieu's playbook, in a sense. But it was Wout who did the same thing. And the difference, the time gap was just staggering. I think it was about 2 minutes, or definitely like 1:40 or 50, which is probably not unheard of, but like I don't remember when was the last time when even not just the World Championships, but any race where that big was the gap between the winner and the second place rider. So I think it was, for me, it was the difference was just very surprising. I think the locals, the Dutch supporters were a bit kind of, they were booing in the first two laps when kind of Wout pulled away. And I guess they just accepted the inevitable after the second or third lap. And they realised that there's not going to be a comeback today for Mathieu.
Yeah, certainly the Belgian fans, once they knew their man was on top, they really became noisy. You've seen a lot more of these riders than I have, but you could tell from Van der Poel's body language early on, particularly his running style, he was not looking comfortable running. Mm-hmm. Renard and I talked about, you know, the fact that they were bounding up the steps at the start, and Van der Poel just didn't look like he was matching Wout's running strides. I mean, Wout was striding, and Van der Poel looked like he was really labouring. Presumably, the running section's not his strong point, but overall, his body language didn't look to me like somebody who was waiting to pull on the rainbow jersey.
Yeah, running is kind of Wout's strong point, and he's always supposed to be better at bet, but sometimes it's just not enough because there's not enough running, and today there was a lot of running and there's a lot of kind of leg work in that way. So and I think in previous years sometimes you see Mathieu, if he's not doing well, he kind of collapses in a sense, and then he finishes like, I don't know, 15th place, and I wouldn't say he doesn't care, but you know. And I think today he was going as fast as he could. He really kind of kept it together. He was trying to claw it back, but he just didn't have the legs, which is very surprising because he was just so dominant the whole year. And there's one race in Namur when Wout won by a big margin, but that was the only race. Even the races that were won by Wout, the difference was within half a minute. So I did not expect this outcome at all.
Yeah, there was a lot of running, and although there was a little bit of changing of positions, Michael van Turnhout got in front of Van der Poel. Van der Poel actually slipped back to fourth for a little while and then came back and was closing in at the end. There wasn't a lot of drama in the race. It struck me as someone, I've watched cyclocross for many years, and it's a bit like when we pray for a wet Paris-Roubaix and then it's not an epic because it just becomes a survival of the fittest. It struck me today that as soon as the margins between the riders were established, You know, Wout van Aert is strongest and this guy's second strongest, third strongest. The order was set and that was that. The course really wasn't offering anything back to anyone chasing, was it?
What was quite interesting that after every race, I had to go to the interview tent where they interviewed the winner. And I think almost every race finished with a solo finish. So there was quite a big margin in every single race. And it makes you think, or it makes it look like it was easy. But every single time, all of the riders are just completely spent. And you don't really see this because they're leading by such a huge margin. And so you think, oh, they're just kind of taking it easy. But they give everything. Like Wout, when he got into that room, and he was just sitting there for minutes. And he was trying to just pull it together because he was completely out of it. He was so exhausted and emotional at the same time, but it just took out so much from all of them.
Well, it certainly didn't look easy. There was not a single point where I thought, no, these guys are taking it easy out there. It was a great weekend of racing. I'm really glad that we came. And it's one of those ones where, you know, it won't be this muddy every year. And I think one of the beauties of the sport, and particularly thinking about the such a contrast between those American races at the start of the season, almost summer races, really, through to something like this, just the variety of terrain and the variety of conditions the riders have to endure. And it's something that you capture every year in the cyclocross photo album, Balint. A little plug for, I'm assuming, as you've got the 2016-2017 edition in front of me here, I am assuming that there's one for the current season, which you'll be, I guess, putting the finishing touches to fairly soon.
Yeah, so since 2011 I've been producing a coffee table book about the cyclocross season. And in the last 2 years, I used Kickstarter to raise the money. This is a quite kind of large format book, about 250, 260 pages. And it covers all the big races in Europe and America, if there's a World Cup there. But beyond just the photos, I also always try to invite contributors, people who are in the know and who kind of follow the sport quite well and then know the sport quite well to kind of dig into different aspects of the sport and just bring interesting stories. Renat, for example, will be contributing to the coming book. There's a training ground in here in Thijs in Lichtaart, which is just a little kind of woody area, and all the pro riders, regardless of affiliations, go there on Wednesdays or other days, but quite often Wednesday. You see Bout and Mathieu and Sanakant, and all the riders just ride and train in this place. And so I asked Renat to go into this and kind of investigate how did this kind of come to become this magical place where...
This is in Herentals, is it? Is
that? I might be making this up. I know it's Lichtaart, but right. Lichtaart is in Herentals. I think it is, but my geography might...
Just sparks because it's the hometown of Rick Van Looy, I think, is so yeah, there's a connection. Well, I mean, the thing is, every town in Belgium's the hometown of somebody famous from cycling. But the book is it's a hardback, it's a fantastic, it's a beautiful format. And are you raising funds for it this year? Is everything so sticking with the same model? So if people want to pledge, how does it work?
So the way it works is It's a Kickstarter campaign, so I have to raise a certain amount of money, and if it all comes together, the book happens. I have different levels of rewards. It starts with just one book, and the top level, you can get a book with the signature of the world champion of your choice. So I'm lucky enough to know these guys, and you know I can ask small favors from them. So last year it was relatively popular, for example, and people were quite happy to get Wout and Sanne's signature and their copy, for example.
So how do people presumably go online, pledge to the Kickstarter, support the book, make it happen?
Yes, exactly. They go to cyclephotos.co.uk and you will see plenty of banners and stuff, information about it.
Well, we're more than happy to give that a plug, Balint. It's a lovely book, and as a thank you, really, for your contributions over the weekend. It's been great getting to know you and getting to know a bit more about cyclocross. And likewise, if this has tickled your fancy and you want us to do a bit more of this, then do let us know. While I'm just a little book club corner, the Cycling Podcast, we've got our own book coming out, our debut book coming out. I think it's out on March the 1st, so not too long now. I know it's certainly finished and off to press. It's called A Journey Through the Cycling Year, and it's a kind of a not at all completist, slightly whimsical in places review of our 2017 season, and take you behind the scenes a little bit of how we put the Cycling Podcast together. It's not as seamless as it may sound. You know, we basically get into all sorts of scrapes and difficulties throughout the season, and obviously we even mention cycling in the book. We've also got a book tour coming up, 7 events around the country, starting on February the 28th in Salford. We then go to Edinburgh and Glasgow, then we have a few days off, and then we return with Nottingham, Hackney in London, Leeds and Sheffield. I think I've got the order of those events right. If I haven't, you can check out thecyclingpodcast.com, where you can find out about all of the events and buy tickets. And if you buy a ticket to the event, you can also get a discounted copy of the Cycling Podcast book. So have a look at that. That's about it for the Cyclocross Podcast from Valkenburg. We will be back later this week, myself, Daniel Freeb and Richard Moore, discussing what's been going on in the world of road cycling. And I have to confess that while I've been here, I have absolutely no idea. I know that the Vuelta a Valenciana has been on, the Dubai Tour will be starting, Daniel will be out there, and I'll catch up. I'll have a look online, see what's been going on. But in the meantime, thank you very much, Balint.
Thank you.
You have been listening to The Cycling Podcast. Subscribe to our newsletter at thecyclingpodcast.com to get all the latest news and special offers delivered straight to your inbox. This episode was edited and produced by Tom Wally.
Pete Rose logged more hits in baseball history than anyone else. No one has come close to breaking his record. But he was also at the center of one of the game's biggest scandals, a scandal that changed baseball forever. In the new book, Charlie Hustle, New York Times bestselling author Keith O'Brien chronicles Pete Rose's spectacular rise and fall. Drawing on firsthand interviews with Rose himself and his associates, this is Pete Rose as we've never seen him before. By Charlie Hustle, available wherever books are sold.